Hello there, Podcast Land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
Welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast. My name is John O'Connor. Like always, I'm with Daniel Tao. And today marks episode number 65 of the podcast, which is totally awesome. Today, we talk with Josh Gomez. He's the guitarist of Queens, New York metal band, The Machinist. We talk to him about opening for Whitechapel and Suicide Silence, creating their self-titled EP, accidentally getting his mom stoned, and more. Real quick, right before we go into the interview, thank you guys so much. We've gotten a hell of a lot of support on our Facebook page. Keep it up. Keep the likes coming. Follow us on Twitter. We're also on there. Follow us on Instagram. We're still trying to set up Snapchat. We'll get that done soon. I don't even know when, but it'll be soon. On the podcast side of things, thank you guys so much for subscribing to us, for telling a friend about us. You know, word of mouth does go a long way. Thank you guys so much for that. Also, keep it up with the rates and reviews. They work with iTunes and their weird algorithm that make us more popular on there. I don't know how it works exactly, but just give us 5 stars. Write a little something. Write about, you know, what you liked about the show, who you want to see on the show, et cetera, et cetera. And that's about it. Let's just go right into it. Episode number 65, Josh Gomez of The Machinist, right now. Wow, man. They could really turn a venue into anything these days.
Yeah, I mean, we've played there, I think, 2 or 3 times now, and the shows are always good there, surprisingly.
So what is the setup? Do they have, like, the ovens to the left and next thing you know, like, a little stage area to the right?
No, it's it's a little bit less complicated than that. So they'll have the initial... I guess table where all the pizza is to the left side.
Uh-huh.
And, towards the back where I guess there would be more seating. It's just an empty spot and, it's pretty DIY in there.
Wow.
Yeah. We've had some great shows there though.
I mean, I guess that's all that matters in the end.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's actually right down the street from the Chance.
Okay. Yeah, I've only been to the Chance once, and that's to see Dan's band live, which was
horrendous.
The worst show ever. Just not good. Nah, I'm kidding. Dead Tide's a great fucking band, and if anyone out there listening hasn't checked them out, definitely check them out. Dead Tide Metal on Facebook. But anyways, that whole area is just like a fucking hike and a half to get to. Like, I live in right next to Newark in Jersey City, so it's like a good, what would you say, Dan, like an hour-ish
From here, it's like 1:15. I mean, it's not that bad. I think the area is kind of sketchy, but
it is a little sketchy.
It is very sketchy.
Very. A little to very. But whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's funny you hear people that are like, do not venture the streets away from the chants or, you know, the venues.
Oh, yeah. We were told that at the liquor store on the corner of the pizza place. We had told them, like, you know, we're from the city, but, and they're like, yeah, just be really careful after dark. I'm just like, oh, great. We're just, like, hanging outside of the bar, like, drinking and whatnot. And, I mean, it's sketchy, but if you keep to your own, you know, there will be no problem for the most part, but it is a very sketchy part of town.
Oh, absolutely. I can agree with you there. So you're, do you actually live in Queens now, or?
Yeah, I've lived in Queens pretty much my whole life.
Nice.
What
part? Astoria?
No, Glendale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and my, our drummer lives in the next town over, which would be Ridgewood. We pretty much live like 10 minutes away, like on foot, probably like a 15-minute walk, not even.
Wow, that's pretty awesome that you're that close to each other in a big city known as New York City.
Yeah, I mean, Amanda lives, she does, I don't want to say she lives on the opposite side of us, but to get to her, it's a little bit more of a hike. Hmm. We're all within like a 20-30 minute radius of each other. But Toby, our bass player, he lives out in Long Island, and I think he's about like an hour away from us, but we're all still very close nonetheless.
Yeah, there's always one band member that's completely fucking out there. Like in my band, we were all like local around like the Clifton area. And then you had our guitar player, Josh. What a coincidence. He actually lived up in, where did Josh live?
Monroe.
Oh, in Monroe County, New York. So he had to travel like 45 to an hour just to practice.
Yeah, I mean, if you know what time to leave for practice, it's usually not a problem. Like I'm actually in Long Island right now. It took me maybe about an hour and some change to get here, but there was some traffic, so it took a little longer. But for the most part, getting back and forth at night is usually a breeze.
Yeah. Also, like you said, depends on what time you go, because I know getting to Long Island is just a fucking pain in the ass. Like right around rush hour, or like right before or right after, it's a nightmare.
It's the worst. Oh my God. Like the absolute worst. Just like I left my house, I want to say, maybe like 6:30, and there was just nothing but traffic, but it wasn't, it had nothing to do with anything actually on the road. It was just people rubbernecking at other things.
Of course.
Yeah, and it's just like, are you kidding me? And then once they're done rubbernecking, it just goes smoothly.
The absolute worst. Like, you have to pick and choose your rubbernecking. Like, if you rubberneck just a fender bender, go fuck yourself. I hope you get fender bender next.
Yeah,
but if it's like a scene of like The Walking Dead, like on the right hand side where like you see like decapitated bodies and shit like that, like, okay, you can slow down and look at that. That's cool.
But I mean, you could even use your peripherals for that. You know, that's what I do to avoid rubbernecking. Like, I just look slightly to my right or my left, you know, try not to like bother the people behind me, you know, like. It's just there's subtle ways of doing things, and people don't know how to do that, especially driving on the highway.
Oh, yeah. And the worst is when you're going like 45 miles an hour, next thing you know, someone has to slam on their brakes, and that causes traffic. It's just a fucking nightmare. And this is coming from the state where we have something called Bridgegate going on right now.
What is Bridgegate?
It's apparently the mayor of Fort Lee, I want to say, pissed off our governor, Chris Christie, to the point where Chris Christie actually hired people to slow down and cause traffic jams right before the George Washington Bridge.
What?
And now he's in court for it.
That is insane. That is absolutely absurd. This is why I do not leave Queens for things of the sort. Because for the most part, where I live, I mean, there's your average traffic, but for it's not nearly anything I experience when I'm in Manhattan or going into Long Island or leaving the city or any of that. It's absolutely insane.
Well,
I just
the worst part about Manhattan is there are so many people and so many cars in a tiny ass area. That's what fucks everything up.
Yes. I work at Irving Plaza, and traffic coming out of there usually around like 11 to 12 at night. You would think it was a cakewalk, but it's the farthest thing from it. Well, like 2 hour traffic jams.
Jesus Christ.
At 1 a.m. Like, what? Who's doing any type of construction at 1 or 2 a.m? Like, it's absolutely insane.
Holy fuck! What do you do at Irving Plaza?
I've been a security guard.
Shit! How long have you been doing security for?
I've been doing security since I was, I want to say 17 or 18. I've been at Irving for the past year, though.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I used to work at Irving like 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was under Royce and Mike Huey and those guys. I don't know if they're still
those
there.
Those dudes aren't there anymore. No.
Oh,
no.
Fuck.
A bunch of different people now.
Holy shit. It was like a major overhaul.
Yeah. Even the GM that was there when I was hired is even replaced now.
Holy crap.
Like it's a constant revolving door over there.
Yeah, it sucks. Like, I mean, I only did the Music Geeks thing for Live Nation, but like I was always there. It was like every either like twice or, you know, even 3 times a week I'd be at Irving Plaza or Gramercy and stuff like that. So I got to know the staff and shit like that. And like I even saw it firsthand, like people getting like knocked out, they got switched around, they got canned for like no real apparent reason. It really like fucking confused the hell out of me, but
I mean, you keep to yourself and you do what you have to do. I mean, that's my recipe for success there.
Yeah.
It just because the reality of it is I'm there to support what I do with the machinist, and that job actually allows me to do as much as I need to do with the machinist. So it works out really well. It's probably the best job I've had to date in terms of helping me continue my musical endeavors.
Yeah, I'm sure that, was it like a rotating schedule? Like you asked like what days you want to be put on and whatnot?
Yeah, I pretty much make my own schedule actually. And, we try to get the shows, the next shows in, you know, at the beginning of the month. So by the time the mid month rolls by, my schedule's already made and there's no problems and there's no questions really asked. We took the whole month of July off and nobody batted an eye, so I'm pretty okay with that.
That's pretty awesome, man. Now, something a little less awesome. Were you there for the whole TI thing or no?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. What the fuck was that
was.
Like?
It was fucking terrible. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely terrible. I almost got shot in the back.
Oh, fuck. You were up there. You were right in
front.
Fuck.
Yeah, I was up there. There's not too much I could say about it, but it was pretty fucked. I'm just glad that everybody I work with is okay.
Yeah.
It definitely puts in perspective for security measures and stuff like that. Even before I was working at Irving, I never really thought about what goes into security for venues and whatnot, because I think everybody forgot about what happened to Dimebag. Like,
yeah.
He was shot right on stage. And it was kind of forgotten about, and that whole thing kind of brought it back up. And it's good because, you know, the reality of it is at any point, anybody could bring in something like that or try to bring something like that in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it ruins everything, you know, for the person performing to the showgoers to the venue who could possibly be shut down for things of the sort.
Absolutely.
So I'm really glad that everything is cool now. And you know, venue security is a little tighter because, you know, we do live in a super crazy world where shit like that still happens.
Yeah.
You know? And, the fucked up part was, is I had a pretty big hometown show the next day. So I didn't really get any sleep.
Yeah, how could you?
And I had to, but it was also my fault because as soon as I got home, I packed a bowl and just started watching Law and Order. And,
that show.
It's an amazing. I was watching SVU. It's such a good show.
Oh, man.
And I guess it was subconsciously I put it on. Mm-hmm. But I just sat there, pretty much laid there with my eyes open until they gave away, and then I woke up for the show the next day, which was actually a really good show. It was our first hometown show in, I think, 2 years, and it definitely, you know, made everything a lot less chaotic from the day before. It was a breath of fresh air there.
Yeah, really. Jesus Christ. I mean, like, you know, anything can happen in every community, but it seemed like, you know, the hip-hop community wasn't too bad when it came to shows. Like, you know, outside in a nightclub, yeah, shit, a lot of shit happens with, like, gang violence and shit like that. But, like, inside, like, a venue, there really wasn't that many cases of, you know, shooting up the place, thankfully, but... You know,
yeah,
so
I mean, there's always cases of violence within venues. I mean, that's just, I guess, how, like, you know, humans and people and how they are under the influence and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, like I said, if it was any indication to beef up security way back when Dimebag got shot, I mean, now is definitely the time to really do that, because I mean. Think of all these small venues that don't have security who aren't as lucky.
Yeah.
You know, anything can happen at these venues, and it's scary to think about, because, like, for instance, that pizza place, if anybody wanted to hurt us, they can hurt us, you know? There's nothing stopping them, you know, where it's us against them. And that's why I'm grateful enough to have now when I go to these bigger venues to have these people there. Because anything can happen, mm-hmm. and it makes the whole experience a lot safer.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, definitely. Holy shit. But anyways, let's talk about something a little bit more lighter. So you actually had a busy October. Like, you've opened up for, you know, Sworn In, you've opened up for Suicide Silence, Whitechapel, all in a matter of a weekend. How crazy was that experience?
Damn. It's really hard to describe. We had a show that Thursday in Maryland. We played in a field.
A field?
Like a legit
in a field?
Field.
Wow, okay.
In a field, yes. We played in a field. Our lighting was courtesy of whoever owned whatever car that had their lights on.
My God, what kind of redneck shit were you playing?
Well, it was in a field, was, John.
Yes, clearly.
Yeah, it was... It was pretty wild. We had a good time, though. Then the Sworn In show, we didn't really know what to expect, because we'd never been to Rhode Island. We were supposed to hit that venue on our last tour in July. Mm-hmm. And we were playing main stage, so we were kind of nervous about that. When we got to this venue, super crazy big. Dillinger just sold out a show there the night before.
Oh, Jesus.
So we were all pretty stoked on it. We didn't expect the turnout that we got. I mean, it was pretty dope. We had a really good time. The crowd liked us. The bands were awesome. I mean, that was really awesome. And then the next day going into that was what happened to fall on my birthday. So, that show, A Game Changer, was just, it was insane. Absolutely insane. Oh man. That was the biggest show we've ever played to date.
Wow.
Easily. I want to say during our set, we had maybe 200 plus people, if not more. But the worst part, I would say it was the best worst part about it was, I'd gotten a weed cake for my birthday. It was a legit weed cake, and, everybody's eating it. And my girlfriend, insisted on giving me the biggest piece.
Oh no.
Probably maybe like 40 minutes before I went on.
Oh no.
Oh dude. Anxiety already had settled in even before I had eaten it. The cake was delicious. I will say that. Absolutely delicious. It started to settle in when I was loading my things onto stage, and I don't know if you guys have taken edibles, you know how hard they hit once they hit.
Oh yes.
And,
I've never done it.
Oh, dude! All right. So
there's a whole difference between eating it and smoking it. It's like two different sensations. Like, eating it hits you like 20 times harder and lasts for like 10 times longer.
And drinking it's probably, you probably get the effects more.
I've actually drank weed before. As weird as that sounds, it doesn't last as long.
I heard you could make
it
in tea.
Tincture.
Yeah, tincture.
Yeah, it's like you drop it under your tongue. I mean, it was pretty cool. Yeah. But
basically, a tincture is they I just know this from like herbs and shit. Uh-huh, they put it in alcohol.
Yeah.
No, like any herb, dude. You just take like mint, you put it in alcohol, and you leave it for like months or whatever. And that's like a tincture.
You could leave it for like, I think like 10 days.
Oh, really? So it's not that long? I thought it was months. All right. No. I guess I was wrong.
Well, it depends on the alcohol that you get. Because if you could get like Devil Springs or something like that, you put an eighth or something in there and let it ferment. Yeah, it'll be done within like 10 days or so.
I was watching this thing on YouTube. This lady like went out and bought like really crappy vodka. Straight vodka. I think it was even worse than that. Like a no-name brand. But you just pour it in there, and then you, like, stuff it with, like, mint or whatever herbs you're trying to make the tincture, and just put it in a mason jar.
Well, good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if anybody out there wants to make a weed tincture, you found the recipe.
Yeah, thanks, Dad.
Devil Springs.
Yeah.
But right before we went on stage, while we were on stage doing sound check, my guitar wasn't working. Something in my rig wasn't working. So I'm freaking out, like really bad. The sound guy just keeps asking for guitars, and I'm trying to fix it with the stage manager. So immediately, the way that it worked at Loudfest, so after one band was done, the next band went on, and we were the last local band for the main stage. So pressure was on; it wasn't working. I was freaking out. Soon as I figured out what the problem was, which was a simple cable. We just went into it, and I was on autopilot. I really don't know how I got through that set. Dude, it was insane. Like, I've never played that stoned in my life. It was fucking wild. Apparently the set was good.
Apparently. I don't know for sure.
Because our set was cut short. Normally we have 5 songs in our set. And we were only able to play 4. So from what I've heard from friends and new fans and our merch guy, and it was really good, which makes me feel good because obviously I had no idea what was going on. I just kind of just shifted into overdrive, started headbanging, and that's how that went. And I mean, the rest of the bands, dude, Loudfest was so good. Oh, like every band killed it. Every band. And we got to watch some bands that we all grew up like listening to side stage. And it was definitely an unforgettable weekend by far. Just so much fun. Met a bunch of new friends. And you learn from that, you know? It's a learning experience, and it definitely makes me want to get on bigger tours like that and or bigger shows and play main stage more often. You know, it's definitely an eye-opening thing because, you know, to think only a few years ago we had nothing. You know, we didn't have a solid lineup. We didn't have merch. We didn't have anything, you know, and in a year we've gotten that far. You know, from taking it seriously.
Yeah, and like both Dan and I have been saying this, like every member has to take it as serious as the next. Like you all have to do at least 100%. There's no like one or two people can do this on their own and support the entire band.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Oh, it's well, that was the problem that we had. We originally started as a 5-piece, and we kept cycling through members. Me and Amanda are really the only two original members left. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where we were selective on who we wanted to do this with us, because this is something that we had wanted for so long and still want, you know, till this day. And everybody now, as it being a 4-piece, everybody's in it for the same thing. We all share a common goal, and we've considered getting another member, but we're not entirely sure on it because we work so well together as a 4-piece, and we all share that common goal, and we don't want to throw up the equilibrium for that by throwing in another member out of necessity, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's been working out pretty well. We can't complain at all. There's more room in the van.
Yeah. And hell, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly. We lost our last guitar player last year, and we were kind of in a rut. We didn't really know what to do, whether or not to replace him or cancel out harmonies and things like that. And we went the backtrack route, and it worked out pretty well. And people like to think that playing to a backtrack is easy. It's not.
No, not at all.
In the slightest. We've had some technical difficulties where the track is canceled out, and it's just been the four of us, you know. And we still got to make it work. Still, just as tight as we were, you know, with the backtrack.
Hey, that's great to hear. I mean, a lot of people, if that backtrack goes out, then they're like, what do I do now?
Exactly.
You keep playing. What the fuck else do you want me to say?
We had that problem. We played Dingbats with Traitors at the beginning of the month. Mm-hmm. And everything was going pretty well for a bit, and then the backtracks kept cutting out. And as opposed to stopping the set, we just... Like, I don't know how our drummer did this, our drummer Steve. Mm-hmm. I guess mid-hit, he managed to hit the space bar. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how he did it, but he did it. And it continued, and it continued not working, and we were just like, you know, fuck it. Mm-hmm. We're not going to use it. And it was a pretty packed out show. And, as opposed to stopping and, you know, restarting it, you know, the show must go on. You gotta, you know, press on, because there's bands, you know, after you that are waiting to go. You know, we've been on tour. We know how it feels to have a band like stall your set, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then have less people there, and it's the worst. So we try to be as respectable and courteous as we possibly can.
Yeah, it is rough when you go to a show and you're like, okay, so my friend's band's going on at 9. That's cool. I'll show up at 8:30. Next, you know, something gets delayed, and it gets delayed. And then the band that's on at 9 o'clock goes on at 9:45. And, like,
yeah.
If you're talking about, like, a Sunday night, that kind of fucks a lot of things up.
Oh, dude, hell yeah. I mean, it also depends on who's playing, because, I mean, even that Loudfest, Suicide Silence, I believe, headlined that. There wasn't nearly as many people there, which is fucking shocking.
Really?
I mean,
wow.
Yeah, I don't want to say half of the place cleared out, but a good portion of people cleared out. And I guess I understand it's a Sunday. Suicide Silence went on, I think, at 10:30 or maybe 10 o'clock. So it's reasonable enough, but yeah, it does fuck a lot of things up for people when... things aren't done properly. I like to pride myself on loading in fast and loading out fast. Mm-hmm. Because I don't like to, you know, sit there and procrastinate and, you know, not have things done, because all that time that you take, you know, another band could have been setting up and your shit could have been in the trailer and you could have been having a beer, mm-hmm. you know, watching the next band.
Or eating like a wheat cake.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, funny thing about the weed cake. Everybody kept trying to get me to smoke and drink more after that. And
fucking psychos.
They're like, it's your birthday. It's your
just
birthday.
Just keep going.
Like, yeah.
We don't care if you royally fuck up your life.
Yeah, oh, my God, dude. They finally, peer pressure settled in, and I smoked a little bit more, and I just sat down. I did not want to do anything. I just wanted water, and I drank a little bit more after... I mean, that cake lasted 6 hours.
Oh, my God.
Dude, 6 fucking hours. Like, once it settled and I was like, okay, that's when I started drinking. But, yeah, I'm not going to eat wheat like that. Dude, it was like a serving size for two people.
Oh, and you had a big-ass slice.
Yeah, I had the biggest slice.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and then... This is a side story, though. I think you guys would find this a little funny. Mm-hmm. So I brought one last piece back with me back home, and I left it in my room, and my mom calls me, and she's out, and I didn't think anything of it, and she's like, oh, I don't feel well, And I was like, well, what was the last thing you ate? And she was like, oh, I had a slice of cake in your room.
Oh, oh my God.
And I'm like, no.
You did not. Puke no, that up right didn't. Now.
So, yeah, she ate a small sliver of a slice. And, yeah, she won't be eating things in my room anymore.
I told you to stay out of my room, Mom.
Yeah, she tried to justify it, but I was like, you can't go eating random things in people's rooms because you just never know what they might contain.
So was that like the first time she was high, or was she like habitual smoker?
Yes, yeah, that was the first time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't even like talk her down from it either. Oh,
well, here's the best part though. So I was with my girlfriend, and so my mom comes home, and she's she needs help to get upstairs, and I'm like, all right, I got you. She's giggling just a whole bunch, and so she makes me bring up this duffel bag that I had lent to her, and apparently there was a cake in the bag, and the cake had her feeling so some type of way that she couldn't put the candles on my actual birthday cake, and my girlfriend came and got me. Oh, and yeah, it was really funny. It was really, really funny.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we got some good weed cake over here, man.
Clearly.
Really good really good weed cake. Like the best. It was awesome. I'm just never gonna take it before a big show like that.
Fuck no.
Absolutely not.
I mean, if anything, just take a hit of a joint or something just to mellow you out a little bit, but oh my God.
Yeah, that's what I usually do. I don't want to say I smoke the most in the band, but I definitely smoke the most frequently. Usually, like, especially on the drives and whatnot, like, I like smoking, and it'll be, like, 3 a.m, we're on the road somewhere, and I'll just wake up, you know, take a bowl hit, you know, see who's up. You know, bullshit with them, go back to sleep, do the same shit over again.
Jesus Christ,
but,
man.
Yeah, awesome. usually that's my ritual. I'll smoke a little bit before I go on, smoke some after, you know. But edibles, no, that's some next level shit. Never again. I'll wait till after I play next time.
Your mom started with next level. That's hysterical.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Well, she only had a sliver. Very, very thin slice. And I told her, I was like, you're extremely lucky that you didn't have, you know, the whole thing. Because, like, the cake looks good. It was a good-looking cake. It was like a confetti, like a funfetti cake with, like, just rich, creamy chocolate frosting on the top. And it just looked appetizing, you know? from an average glance, it just looks like a regular cake. You know?
Yeah.
Like, who would think that the contents of that cake have dire repercussions for those who aren't expecting it?
Yeah, really. Oh, my God.
Just even thinking about it, it just kills me. Just think, oh, my God.
It is quite hysterical, man. Holy shit. You got your mom high off of your birthday cake.
Yeah. I mean, she's good now, which I'm super stoked. But, yeah, that's a funny thing. A friend of mine completely reminded me of the whole scenario a few days ago, and I was like, holy shit, how did I forget about that? I was like, oh yeah, it's all the fucking weed I smoked. Duh.
Yeah,
you know, smart. But yeah, that weekend was just amazing. Honestly, one of my favorite weekends, like, ever. Definitely the best birthday I've ever had, by far.
Really? Wow.
The best show, the biggest crowd we've ever played in front of. It gets me nervous even just thinking about the crowd, like how the reaction we got and everything. It was very humbling, because we play Jersey frequently, but, you know, we're not your typical band, I guess, you know. We're not full deathcore. We're not full metalcore. We're not, you know, there's a little of everything in it. And to be received like that, you know, it was pretty rad, because, like I said, we're not for everybody, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And And I'm okay with that, you know, because there's a lot of bands that I listen to that I know people aren't into at all, you know. But, you know, everybody has their own thing. Different folks, different strokes.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, listening to your music, like, I heard, like, one song sounded just like For the Fallen Dreams. Next thing you know, it sounds like the Acacia Strain, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? But this is all awesome at the same time.
Yeah, well, see, those are bands that I grew up loving.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just stems from the influences that, you know, I had. But now, as I've gotten older, my influences have definitely, I don't want to say matured, because that sounds like a really dickhead statement, but it's definitely broadened. There's a lot of bands that I don't listen to as much anymore, but have been replaced with more musical things, you know? Like, I'm really into, like, instrumental music and blues and a bunch of different things. And it's slowly showing in the music, but not to the point where it's like, oh, this dude is fucking ripping this off, you know?
Yeah.
Try to do it tastefully. Because, I mean, flattery... Well, what's the saying? Imitation is the biggest form of flattery?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or something like that?
Most,
like,
sincerest form, I think, or something like that. Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah.
Something of the sort, yeah. But, you know, I don't want to be an imitation, you know? I would rather have our own sense of... I'm trying to think of the right word for it. Our own thing, pretty much. Like,
yeah,
you can
yeah.
hear these influences, but at the end of the day, it's more apparent that, you know, we're developing our own sound. And that's, like, that's super apparent with the newer stuff, too. Because as soon as we were done with that EP, we started writing. We're pretty heavily into the process now.
Wow, that's awesome, man. But, I mean, like, you remember, like, a couple years ago when, like, A Day to Remember was, like, extremely huge and everyone did the whole pop-punk breakdown thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Oh, hell yeah. Jesus. Dude, well, think of it this way. The whole djent movement. I mean, I based my life off of that for a small portion of my life, you know? Like, all those bands that came out were super influential to... just the progression of music, because, you know, you had deathcore, you had your hardcore, you had your metalcore, you had all these types of metal, but progressive metal was kind of at a standstill. And that really, like, inspired me to try different things. And Periphery is a band that I look to for inspiration in the sense of creativity and what you can do, because they have so many, they have such a large catalog, but each song is different and it sounds different, but it still has that Periphery sound. It's like you could put on any Periphery song and you'll know it's them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And that's my main goal when it comes to, like, writing and stuff like that, is to put all these different influences that I have in one, but still keep that machinist sound. So it's not like we're, you know, biting anything. But you know, that you're absolutely right. That whole, like, I think it was like 2006, like, popcore. I don't even know what the fuck to call it. You know,
I don't know either.
You know, I still listen to those bands. I'm not even gonna lie. I love A Day to Remember.
Oh yeah, A Day to Remember fucking still rips to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I don't know if it's the last album. No, it's the album before that.
Common Courtesy.
Common Courtesy.
Yeah.
That was the last good album I think they put out. Honestly, like. The album before that, I think, what was it called?
Homesick?
No.
Homesick is, that's the best fucking album they got.
What Separates
far.
Me From You, I think.
That came, yes. Yeah, but that came before Homesick.
No, that came after Homesick.
Yeah, but
no,
that album.
What Separates You?
Yeah.
I forgot. I'm thinking of.
For Those Who Have Heart?
Yeah. Thinking of that one.
Yeah. See, but What Separates You From, I guess, whatever, they had this one breakdown, and I forget the song, but. They ripped it off from Throwdown. Mm-hmm. It's like dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? That is the exact breakdown. Like, what the fuck? I was like, no, I'm done with this. And then Common Courtesy came out, and I was like, all right, this is cool. I like this. And then the last album, I was like, no, can't get into it. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like there's so many bands doing that now. Mm-hmm. that they kind of lost themselves in the mix with that. Mm. You know, Homesick was such a strong fucking album.
Yeah, I love that album. That, like, I was so addicted to, like, every breakdown from all those songs.
But it was, like, the first time you were hearing them. That was the thing.
Yeah, well, they had the ones in the previous songs, but I don't know. They're just done a certain way. Obviously, you know, I listened to Azalea Dying, so they had breakdowns in their songs, but I don't know. They're just – it did remember, like, they make it a point to have a breakdown in a song at a certain point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely their strongest album, I think, in my opinion, mm-hmm. like, production-wise, because actually Adam D mixed that album.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He's the man.
So good. Oh, the fucking man.
The only thing is on that the album, The Powerless Rise for Azalea Dying, I didn't like the mixing on that album at all.
Why?
Which album?
The Powerless Rise by Azalea Dying.
Honestly,
dude, because like the guitar, like certain like guitar like fills and stuff, I'm trying to think of the word. The hammer-ons and pull-offs, like, you could not hear them. It was just straight up, like, double bass. I just feel like he went overboard on the double bass, but I mean, the production.
They're definitely more of a percussive band. I mean, because if you listen to The Dead Walk, mm-hmm. Casey's album, that's Adam D as well. Mm-hmm. But then if you listen to Define the Great Lie, Under Oath, that's Adam D as well. Mm-hmm. You know, he has, I guess he picks and chooses what he feels the mix is going to sound like, or like what he feels works best, mm-hmm. because these are vastly different bands. Like if you look at all the bands that he's ever produced or mixed, they're all pretty different for the most part. They all have their own signature sound, but those albums stand out so much, mm-hmm. you know, Parkway Drive's Horizons. That was, I think that was Adam D as well. You know, huge yeah. album. But then you have, what other album was that? The Oncoming Storm on Earth.
Yeah.
You know, dude, mm-hmm. huge albums. Production quality, that's immense. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I don't know how he does it.
Who knows? He's just really good at what he does. And the funniest part is, I think he didn't have any say, like, production-wise on the new album for Killswitch.
Hmm. No, that was the album beforehand. No. I think it was two albums before that.
The self-titled?
Self-titled.
Oh, yeah.
Self-titled, yeah. He didn't produce it. And me and my drummer have an ongoing joke about it. It's their breakup album.
It is,
because it's such a sad, sad album. Every song is so sad. It's great. I love Killswitch regardless, but it's a very sad album. And then, you know, the past two albums kind of picked up, you know, where I guess that left off in terms of intensity, but he had more control on the past two albums than he did for self-titled.
Yeah. But I mean, it was, what was I going to say? I had a point and I completely, it seemed like when Jesse like rejoined the band, it seemed like all of like their live like antics and shit like that went away, which kind of pissed me off because like it wasn't Killswitch without Adam D coming out with like a superhero cape or a strap-on doll on his back. You know, it was.
I mean, when was the last time you saw them?
In September, they were at Rock Allegiance down in Philly. I saw their set; like they sounded amazing, but Adam just looked like a regular guy just playing guitar. Like there was no real like costume or anything.
For that New York tour, I saw them two of those dates. I mean, he was in short shorts and a fucking do-rag. I mean, that seems pretty absurd to me. And he was really drunk. He was super drunk. And at one point, he fucked his guitar up or something like that, and he was just drinking and, like, flexing while I guess their guitar tech was fixing his shit. And, no, they're perfect every fucking time I see them. I've seen them with Howard, and I've seen them with Jesse.
Yeah.
And that's a band that will like forever be like one of the greats.
Definitely.
We saw them at St. Vitus, and that was insane, dude. St. Vitus is like 100 capacity.
Yeah, it's extremely small.
The fucking Killswitch, dude. It's insane. Like, oh my god, I've almost cried watching them. I will be mad enough to admit that because they are that perfect.
Yeah, they were really good. And I think, yeah, they were the last show I saw at Roseanne Ballroom.
You were there? Ballroom.
Yeah, with Lamb of God.
Lamb of God and Testament.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that show was so good. That was actually where I almost cried. That exact show. Yeah, and then minutes later, I almost fought some dude because he was, pushing my girlfriend.
Marin up, motherfucker.
Yeah, and then he was getting loud with her, and I was just like, whoa, 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 whoa. No. This is not happening right now. I was just like, bro, you need to get the fuck out of here. and because I guess he thought she was by herself, and she wasn't. I was ready to throw the hands with him. Like, no, you were not. You're not doing this to my girlfriend, nor a woman, for that matter.
Yeah, exactly.
But that was an insane show. Adam D. had, like, bleach blonde hair that day.
Yeah.
It was fucking insane. Oh, my God. That was actually the first time I realized that even the larger bands fuck up. I don't know if you remember Lamb of God fucking up that night.
I'm trying to remember.
Dude, like, I think they were going into Set to Fail. And, like, right when they go into that, dun, 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 like, I guess something happened. And Randy was like, well, this never happens.
Oh, let's yeah, okay, all right, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? Oh, my God. Even they fuck up. I feel so much better about myself. Oh, fuck. But they killed it. Oh, my yeah. God.
And I think that was, like, one of the last tours before they got in, like, I don't want to say they weren't on, like, superstar level yet, but, like, now they're just, like, in a whole league of their own right now.
Well, I mean, it definitely was, because now all they play is, like, arenas and shit like that. But, I mean, even the bigger bands, like, working at Irving, I worked a Disturbed show.
Oh, you worked that? Yeah, I remember that show.
Dude, that show was fucking awesome. Like, capacity's like 1,100. Last time I saw Disturbed was in front of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands, you know? The fact that they're playing smaller venues like that is awesome. And, I mean, even Anthrax, they just played Vitus maybe last month.
Yeah, that was, I think the... I want to say this was right before my show. Like, they played, like, Vitus at, like, midnight or something like that. On, like, Sunday morning, and then Sunday later that day, they played Philly at that festival I was at.
Yeah, it's like, they haven't played a venue that small in 30 years. Like, the fact that bands that size are considering doing these things and having more intimate sets is awesome, because you never, in my wildest dreams, did I ever think Metallica would play fucking Webster Hall.
Yeah, I tried so hard to get tickets to that. And tickets were only like $30, but they were just, it was like a lottery to get them.
And yeah, it was for like their fan club or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, never did I ever think that it would, you know, bands like that would start playing venues like this. And it's insane, you know, and I'm super stoked to be living in the era, I guess, like the golden era of metal, where all these super influential bands are paying their respects by like playing these super small shows. You know, it's super sick, like, to think about that. Like, if Pantera was still around and that happened, I would probably cut off my left nut for a ticket. 100%.
Sacrifice. Oh,
no questions asked, because from what I've seen on the internet, you could get, like, 30 grand per testicle. So, I mean, I could definitely cover a ticket to go see Pantera for a left nut.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But like I said, it's super awesome that all these big shows are happening, and it gives bands like my band and all these other bands the opportunity to hop on these shows.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a show I really wanted to go to. It was Devin Townsend. Between the Buried and Me and Fallujah.
Yeah.
Fucking Fallujah, dude. Like, that's so rad. You know, I've been listening to Fallujah since, you know, their inception, and it's so crazy to see a band like Fallujah playing PlayStation Theater, you know, capacities like over 5,000, you know, it's awesome to see that bands are still doing that. It's just a matter of the dedication and the determination, and all the other shit that it takes to really get there. You know, if you really want something, you know, it's in your grasp. It's just a matter of you wanting it bad enough, you know,
exactly.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, definitely.
Like that, like I said, that this past weekend was super humbling and crazy. Like I still couldn't get it over, like get it out of my mind. Like, we had dudes from Fit for an Autopsy watching our entire set. I'm a huge Fit fan.
That's sick.
You guys ask any one of my friends, like, I'm a huge, huge, huge Fit fan. And it was fucking scary. I didn't know that they were watching us, but when we were told afterwards, I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, that sucks, man. Hopefully I didn't fuck up. Oh, damn it. Like, fuck. I feel like I could have did this better, but, you know, we got good feedback from them. And, you know, it makes me want to do these shows more and more often and get on these bigger shows and really, you know, show the world what, you know, these little fucking goons from Queens have to offer in the metal world.
Yeah, because really.
It's, because, you know, everything that's going on in Queens right now, music-wise, is not what we do, mm-hmm. you know? It's, we're a bit more on the death metal-y side for the most mm-hmm. part, but, you know, if people, you know, accept and like what we do, I mean, so be it. I'm down for it.
Absolutely. I think this will be a good time to wrap things up. It's been pretty successful, this interview, which
oh,
is
definitely.
Awesome. Yeah. So
oh,
I know
yeah.
you let's promote the shit out of you guys. So you have a new EP out, 5 songs, self-titled. You can listen to that shit anywhere you get music. So iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. You have a music video that came out not too long ago for Wake Up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's close to 20,000 views, right?
Yeah, which is fucking crazy. Never did I think that it would get to that, but yeah, it's getting up there now.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome, man. So big props
on that.
We're
also working on a video too. Actually, it's gonna be out within the next few months. So definitely keep an eye on that. It's from the last tour we did, so it's gonna be pretty wild. I'm really excited for that.
Sure, a nice little live video shot in the background. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good trend going on. Like it shows a local band, like, hey, look, this is our music that you're listening to, but this is how we play it live, and this is the intensity that we show and stuff like that. So
exactly.
Yeah, always a great thing for fans to see. You could like The Machinist on Facebook. It's at The Machinist NYC. You guys on Twitter as well?
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram at the same name as well.
Perfect.
Nice.
Can't get easier than that.
Nope.
But anyways, and you said you had a show coming up next month, did you say? I'm sorry.
Yes, November 13th. I hope I'm remembering that. It's with Circuit of Suns and Footage of a Yeti at My Place Pizza in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Yep, all right. So get a slice of pizza, go out, enjoy some awesome local music. Fuck yeah, that's not a bad 1-2 punch.
Nope.
And they serve beer.
How much better can you get, people? Mm-hmm. Come on now.
And pizza, I'm guessing.
Yes, Dan. I think pizza is a fucking given at a pizza place, you motherfucker.
Oh, we don't have pizza here.
No, we're the Billy Joel cover band of the 80s.
Oh, that's the reference I was going for. You picked it up perfectly. Oh, man.
Yeah. So, anyways, right before the interview ends, we like to ask the person we're interviewing if they want to play one of their songs out. I think you sent over 2 of your songs, right, offhand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Which one would you like us to play to close out the interview?
Ooh. I like Sudden Death. Sudden Death, it has it's very bouncy. I'm all about the bounce, but yeah, I'm going to go with Sudden Death.
Not all about that bass, all about that bounce.
Yep.
There we go. Here's Sudden Death by The Machinist. Josh, thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having me,
of
guys.
Course.
No problem.
Absolute pleasure, dude.
Have a great night, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
Later.